This defense is absolutely phenomenal, and they were very good in Pittsburgh when you saw the 30-9. But the way Blake Bortles played today, couldn't complete passes, he couldn't move the ball down the field. And if this team and if this quarterback plays this way next weekend, the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to blow the doors off of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
They get too cute. They go away from Kareem Hunt. They don't give really their best ball carrier a chance to convert, stay on the football field. Now, what do you think the Tennessee Titans are going to do? They're just going to play smash-mouth football and trying to control the clock. Mm-hmm. And then they started exploiting the Kansas City Chiefs' run defense. Mm-hmm. It's atrocious. And that is exactly what the Tennessee Titans want to see. They just couldn't get anything going because of the speed of the Falcons' defense and the way they were all over their wide receivers in particular here. And that can be a problem for a young team that's really, for the first time, making a trip to the playoffs together and just trying to find their way.
It doesn't matter what I think, but I could tell you this. That game didn't come down to that play. We can call it what it is, but, you know, we could have played better as a team. For that situation to take place at hand, slide it call, either way you call it, that game didn't come down to just one call that could have went either way.
Because we care. Everyone thinks that the people down here are not true fans. It's actually the opposite. Everyone says that if you want to protest, stop going to the games, cancel your season tickets. No, we want the team to win. We had to find another media outlet, and Chris McNeil was a genius organizer. He came up with another media outlet to show our frustration. Because we're not going to cancel season tickets, and we're going to go to the games because we want them to win.
Obviously, some of the Browns players who tweeted felt like it was parade. You talked to some of the organizers, Chris McNeil specifically, and it was clearly a protest. Being there, I would say it was a little bit of a little bit of B. I think it was a protest disguised as a parade. All of the messages were very clear, which were they are not happy with Cleveland Browns ownership. They are not happy with Hugh Jackson. They are not happy with 0-16, with 1-31, with the direction of the Cleveland Browns franchise.
Guys were really locked in today. I thought we were physical without fouling. I thought we protected the rim. They missed some shots that they normally make, I think, but, you know, we certainly were able to defend them the way we had hoped we would be able to. Said, hey, we're playing a really, really good team. That team is going to challenge us. Expect them to make some type of run. They're probably going to make some shots that they haven't made before. We knew that they would make a run, and we responded when we needed to.
I honestly believe that the league is more equal than it's ever been. And that's mainly because I think, you know, maybe Alabama's not as unbeatable as they have been. And they've had games that were closer. Every team we played, I think South Carolina was much better this year than anybody gave them credit for. Kentucky, same way. Missouri had a great finish. I respect our league.
I love playing against SEC teams. I love playing against great athletes that they have. Each time I play an SEC game, I know what type of game I'm going to get. I know that it's going to be physically amicable against great athletes. You know, it's going to be a great challenge.
And the only two teams playing this season, you know, the only game that's left, two SEC teams are playing. Obviously, all the talk about, you know, the SEC is this, the SEC isn't as good, I kind of think that that's proof that that's not true. But it's going to be a tough physical game, full quarter. So we know that going into this game that we're playing a tough opponent, it's going to be a great matchup.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, just a little word to the wives there with, who was that at the very end, Damian Harris?
Yes.
Is he the one who said, talking about the SEC?
Yes.
You know, just because your two top teams are in the national championship game, it does not mean that your conference is that damn good. Because I got bad news for you, SEC. This is a bit of a charade. This is a bit of a mirage. This is a bit of a, it's a production. And it's a narrative that, quite frankly, will not stand up to the true test of scrutiny. Welcome to the extravaganza on this Monday afternoon as we get rolling at 11 minutes past 3 o'clock on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader, and we welcome you to join us. Coming up at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. It doesn't stand up to the test of scrutiny. It really does not, because the SEC has not been a great football conference, really, for the last couple of years. For all of the national, you know, coverage, and for the SEC network, a part of ESPN, and all of that nonsense. I suppose you could say they're really, really good. They do have a lot of marketing, and that's part of the charade that I'm talking about. They do have a lot of support down there in the great Southeast, the Southeast Conference, of course. But And they do have great teams from time to time. And they're almost always, if they're great in the SEC, they are great and ranked at the top of or near the top of the national college rankings. But tell me what is so doggone good about a league that features Kentucky 7-6, Missouri 7-6, Florida 4-7, Vanderbilt's terrible at 5-7, Tennessee fell off the map. They were 4-8. LSU and Mississippi State were both 9-4, which is solid, I suppose. Texas A&M, Ole Miss. I mean, I'm looking for high-ranking teams that deserve high rankings. Does Alabama deserve their ranking? Yes. Does Georgia deserve its ranking at 13-1? Yes. Do they have any problem with the way that the Final Four turned out in terms of the results? Well, a little bit. I was rooting for Oklahoma. But do I have any problem? No, Alabama and Georgia punched their tickets. Congratulations. It means those two teams are two of, if not the two, best teams in college football for 2017, now cut, you know, crossing into 2018. But it does not mean that the fact that they are, you know, because they both came from the same conference, that it means that the conference is the best. Because it's just not. That would be like saying that because two teams from the AFC East made the playoffs in the National Football League, that the AFC East is the best conference in, or division, I beg your pardon, in football, in the NFL. Because the Patriots had the best record in the league at 13-3, and Buffalo squeezed in thanks to a Baltimore Ravens untimely loss at 9-7. You had Miami was awful at 6-10, and New York Jets were terrible at 5-11. Anybody can argue that the best team, or excuse me, the best division in the National Football League is the AFC East because they had two representatives? Anybody really think it's the AFC South because they had two representatives, neither one of which would be number one in a power ranking, of course, Jacksonville and Tennessee, but you follow the point. I mean, I think clearly the best division in football, if you're going to do that sort of thing, has got to be the NFC South, right? Three out of the four teams made the playoffs. New Orleans, Carolina, and Atlanta made the playoffs, each of them with double-digit wins. That's pretty doggone impressive. So, you know, you've got to take a lot into consideration, not just the two teams that finished at the top or in the championship game. It does not mean your conference is the best. So SEC people can kind of, you know, pump the brakes a little bit on that. I'm not a huge fan of that argument. Having said that, I am a huge fan of the national title game matchup tonight, and I think it's going to be an awful lot of fun. We'll be asking you for your predictions about how you think that's going to go throughout the program today. We have one guest, by the way, who will be joining us. It'll be Scott Petrak to talk NFL Wild Card Weekend, which I'll get started in a moment. Wild Card Weekend has come and gone. Some of it very exciting. Some of it simply unwatchable, just brutal, barbaric, old, no, you know, offense was set back a few decades in that Jacksonville-Buffalo game. I think that is fair to say. So we'll get into that in a bit with Scott Petrak coming up at 10:35. What time is it? 3:35. And we'll talk to him about that parade. You heard a little bit of the cuts in the montage there at the top of the hour about the parade that they had in Cleveland. I got to tell you, I give them credit, by the way. I give those fans who were able to come out in sub-zero temperature when you factor in the wind chill, out to Cleveland and circled First Energy Stadium in a big zero, you know, resembling, of course, the number of wins that they had on the season. Over 3,000, police there estimated around 3,200 to 3,500 fans came out and walked in that parade, celebrating slash mocking the horrific, terrible, pathetic, putrid franchise that is the Cleveland Browns, the worst franchise. Kush, did you ever come around to me on that? I mean, you know, because we've kind of talked about hockey a little bit. I'm not as much of a hockey fan.
Yeah.
I called the Browns organization, the Browns franchise, the very worst franchise in all of team sports in North America. And I stop at North America only because I know nothing about soccer teams Europe or South America or anywhere else. But I mean, honestly, the Browns are the worst team franchise, the worst team in all of professional sports, no matter the sport, at least in North America. Yes?
Oh, yeah. There was never any question on that for me either.
Okay. I just don't remember you speaking on it very much. Every time I talk about this, you remain silent, and by your silence, you express dissent.
No, not at all in this case. I can't add anymore. Whenever you bring this concept up, there's nothing more I can add because it's so true on its face.
Yeah, because nobody has ever been as bad as they are for as long as they have been bad. And that's the thing. The 76ers pushed that a little bit over the course of a, you know, 3 or 4 year window known as their process, but not since 1999. I mean, it's just as putrid as it gets. Since 1999, and then with the capper, of course, being 2017 and the 0-16. So it is just that bad. But they did. They sent a message to management. They sent a message to players. And by the way, I think that message was received because a few players were ticked off, Kush. Danny Shelton among them, defensive lineman. Danny Shelton, defensive or outside linebacker slash defensive end. Emmanuel Ogba. These guys were tweeting and talking about how these Browns fans aren't real Browns fans. And about how when we turn this around and start winning, you'll all try to get back on the bandwagon and talk about how you've always been there. And we'll remember you weren't. And that, to me, is a great sign. It's a great sign that the players are ticked because it means the message is being received. What isn't a great sign for me, and I know I'm getting off on a tangent here because I started out doing some other things, but what's not a great message for me or not a great sign for me is the fact that the players seem more upset that the fans are making a statement than they were upset about going 0-16. They are more publicly angry that the fans are mad at them and mocking them and Jimmy Haslam's ownership than they were publicly upset about 0-16. I didn't see any of the fire coming from tweets like the ones from Danny Shelton and others. I didn't see any of the fire about being 0-12. I didn't see any fire saying, we are going to stop this thing. We are more dedicated than ever. We had a great week of practice. We will not go 0-13. I didn't see them change their tune or their tone at 0-14 or 15. And I didn't even see a whole lot of apologies to the fans, maybe from a player or two, when they finished 0-16. They were more upset that the fans were not taking their suckitude in good humor than they were about actually giving the fans that suckitude, those horrific efforts with those horrific results each and every week. That's the thing that bothers me the most, that it seems like what bothers them the most is that the fans aren't just eating their blank sandwiches every Sunday and saying, may I have another, please? Oh, that was delicious S. Give me another S sandwich. Can I have another one next week? No, the fans aren't just saying, it's okay, Brownies, we still love you. They're saying, you pathetic wretches are embarrassing. Here's your embarrassing parade. We're going to show you exactly how we feel, about this embarrassing display that you give us each and every Sunday. And, Kush, I got to tell you, the fact that the players are mad about it is something that makes me smile.
Yeah, and you're right about that. I didn't hear a whole lot from them while the losses were piling up before the 0-16. And it does make you, wonder. But I'm actually more mad at those in various, honestly, thinking about the silly parade thing, I'm more mad at the ones who are, just all upset with the people that did this in the first place. I saw a number of those types of guys that weren't players over the weekend, and every time I saw it, I kept thinking, well, what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to, as you alluded to with the players, or is they supposed to just take this all in good fun and laughs? Because it ain't funny anymore, and that's why we're here talking about an 0-16 parade. Detroit didn't have one of these. This is the culmination of all the suckitude for all these years now, piling up in the grand 0-16, and these are a bunch of fans. You heard from the one guy in there who is a fan saying, we're still going to go to the games. This isn't about that. This is about, having to send a message to the whole organization that this we can't tolerate this anymore. We want this team to win.
Yeah, I completely concur. Absolutely right. And no disrespect to the fans in Detroit who didn't do this in 2008 and have a parade like this, but they, while they have suffered, and don't get me wrong, I know they haven't had a playoff win in what, 25 years or 26 in Detroit? Jim?
Say what?
Oh,
I was on the phone. I understand.
Sorry,
what was your question?
I didn't look over. My bad. So the Lions haven't had a postseason win in 26 years, is it?
Yeah, the that 91 division was the last one. And only one in the Super Bowl era, of course, too.
So, well, can we call that 27 years now? Or 20, well...
Yeah, no, that's... Yeah, I think...
Well,
we can,
the 2018 season happens, we'll be able to
right, because that would have been January 92 for the 91 season. Gotcha.
My point is, while they haven't won a playoff game in a long, long time, obviously, it hasn't been as putrid as this. And they didn't suffer, by the way, through 0-16 on the heels of 1-15.
Right.
They didn't go 1-15 and think, hey, that's rock bottom. It can't get worse than that, and then have it get worse than that.
Yeah, that was the rock bottom for them.
What's that?
For the Lions, that was the rock bottom. Then they drafted Stafford, and for what it's worth, at least been to the playoffs three times. I know
you're missing my point. What I mean is they didn't think that they didn't have a 1-15 season.
Right, I know.
That looked like rock bottom, and then it got lower. It broke through
exactly.
The rock at the bottom and got worse the next year. They had the one bad, 0-16, the one horrific rock bottom season, and then, like you said, drafted a quarterback and got back to respectability. I don't see respectability anywhere in sight for the Browns. I don't see anything even close to respectability in the next several years, to be quite frank, unless John Dorsey is some kind of a miracle worker and actually finds a way to hit on all of these draft picks that every single drafting front office regime in the Browns over the last decade has failed to do.
And that entire point, right? Let me stop you right there. That entire point right there that you just made is kind of where I'm feeling. I think a lot of Browns fans, are feeling at this point. Look forward to the draft, the top picks. Why? Every other regime has come through here and screwed all that up.
That's right.
I have to assume that this one will, too, until further notice.
It didn't matter
really
who it was.
Simple.
It didn't matter who was making the picks. If it was, if it was Sashi Brown, or if it was Mike Holmgren, or if it was, for goodness sakes, why can't I remember the former Alabama guy? He runs the Senior Bowl now, Jim. Phil Savage. I'm having a brain fart here. Phil Savage. It didn't matter who was picking the players over the course of the last 10 years. They've all picked the wrong players.
Mm-hmm.
From Brady Quinn to Trent Richardson and on down the line. And we can list them all again, and Justin Gilbert and Cameron Irving. And it just didn't matter who was making the picks, who the front office personnel were, who the player personnel department leaders were.
Yep.
And so I just have no belief that the immediate future is going to be any better for the Browns. So,
exactly. You can't until proven otherwise.
And that's why these fans had a right to do that, in my opinion. That's why these fans, and I'm with you, by the way. I read a lot of social media, people saying this is just going to embarrass the city.
I'm talking not players on this one.
Right. Yeah. So I'm a fan. Fans all saying this is, these fans who go down there and take part in this, you're not real fans. This is just going to embarrass this city. It's going to make people on the national stage make fun of Cleveland. Well, you know what? They already do, and they're not making fun of the city. They're making fun of the city's team. And if you don't think that the city's team deserves to be made fun of, then you have no pride. You have no pride whatsoever because you should be joining in the making fun of that team.
Because if you're
worried about what the national media is going to say,
yes.
What you should do is if you sit there and say, we're the best fans in the world, our team sucks, and we're okay with it,
yep.
Go Brownies. If you do that, you deserve to be made fun of. You are the most putrid thing imaginable.
Yeah, and for those who are saying, no, it'll hurt the city as opposed to just the team, no, then you're calling that in a vacuum because you're forgetting as long as LeBron's a member of the Cavs, that kind of outweighs it at this point and puts that back.
Well,
to
I don't think they're not talking about
exactly
the ones
I
read.
Too. I heard that too. It'll just make make fun of the city and not just as if not just the team. No, that's kind of countered because LeBron plays for Cleveland
right
now.
No, I don't think you're seeing it.
So it's not about the city, it's about the team.
I don't think you're seeing it. They didn't mean the city as in the other franchises. They mean the city's fans. They're saying that the fans celebrating an 0-16 in a mocking way makes the fans, the city meaning the people thereof, the people look bad. That's, they say it's embarrassing from that standpoint. It doesn't affect the Indians or the Cavaliers or their successes or anything else. They're saying that the city looks bad when what, of course, I believe and you believe and others believe is that if you went out there and rallied against that management and against that ownership group, Jimmy Haslam and Dee Haslam, if you went out there and rallied, to me, you are standing up for yourself as a fan. You are saying what they said to me, Jim, on Saturday was, my city is better than this. My city deserves better than this. We are circling this pit of shame, otherwise known as the factory of sadness. We're circling it to almost isolate it and to separate it out from the rest of the city. this is the piece of trash that we have here that's clogging up what is otherwise a great city with great people, et cetera, et cetera. That's what I think they were doing out there on Saturday. And those who didn't understand that, those who thought that it embarrassed the fans and thus the city itself, you know, meaning the people of that city to me, just aren't thinking it through.
Yeah, I agree.
Because the reality is they are saying we deserve better than this, and we're not going to sit here and take it as we have year after year after year and not rebel against them.
Right.
And that's what I think they were doing.
I can agree with that, sure.
All right, let me get a quick call in here from Adam, who's calling from Oregon. Adam, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Hey, hey, Bob. Hey, you know, I usually don't agree with you about 90% of things. Usually, I'm not going to lie.
Okay, that's fair.
But which makes your show okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, it gives me
an opposite view. You know, I completely agree with you here, man. It does not make the fans look bad at all. If anything, it shows them how hardcore and diehard they are, I guess. You know, and Emmanuel Agba and especially Danny Shelton should know better than anybody. You know, the Cleveland fans that show up in, you know, negative degree weather to voice their displeasure are going to be the hardcore fans. So I don't get what they're saying there, honestly. You know, and the only saving grace, I think, with this John Dorsey thing, and you came with a long line of people, you know, your Phil Savages, your Sashi Browns, you know, Mike Holmgren, they didn't really have any experience in that position of power. You know, Mike Holmgren was a great coach. He never really was a GM in his whole career or a president. You know, Phil Savage.
Although I will admit this, by the way, that when they made him the president, club president, I argued that, yeah, he wasn't the GM in name, but he's Mike Holmgren. Nobody had more say on what players came there than Mike Holmgren in Green Bay.
So, exactly.
And that was me trying to talk myself into it because, like so many others, I've been so sickened by the failures of so many, I thought, okay, they finally got an experienced guy, even though he truly wasn't the right experience. There wasn't the right experience.
Right.
I tried to talk myself into it.
Right.
You know?
Right. And honestly, with the Dorsey, this is honestly the only silver lining I see in the whole thing is this Dorsey hiring, because he does have a proven track record. You know, he's drafted some really, really high caliber players in this league with some high picks, some low picks. So, you know, really the only saving grace I can really see, I mean, it's not going to happen this year because, you know, sorry guys, Matt Stafford's not walking through that door anytime soon. Josh Rosen and Darnold are not Matthew Stafford. You know, to be fair to them, yeah, they're okay quarterbacks, but they're not Matthew Stafford. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, they may be 5 years from now in the right circumstance. Here's the weird thing, though. I think if Matthew Stafford did walk through that door, it would still not change anything because the culture is so bad, because the offense
Absolutely.
Is so bad under Hugh Jackson, the play calling, everything that you can do to wreck a quarterback, the bad offensive line, injury riddled, no depth, anything you can do to wreck a quarterback, they do. So I think even if Matthew Stafford or another really, you know, top-level NFL quarterback went to Cleveland, they would find themselves in very, very deep trouble.
I think this is the guy, and honestly, I'm so tired of saying this year in and year out, this is the guy to change the culture, You know what I'm saying? How hard is it to stop losing? Like, who wants to lose? Change it. it's just so frustrating, Bob. But
no, you're exactly
hang up.
Right. By the way, here are the names.
Bob.
I only gave a couple from that long list, but I just pulled it up while you talked. Since 99, you remember who the GM was in 99 when they came back as an expansion team?
Oh, that was Adam dropped, and that was what's his face? Palmer was coach.
That was Dwight Clark.
Dwight Clark,
former Niners legend.
Right, because they brought in a whole Niners staff when they first restarted.
Here's the list: Dwight Clark, Butch Davis, who had no experience at this, Phil Savage, who failed, George Kokinas, who failed, Tom Heckert, who failed, Michael Lombardi, who failed, Ray Farmer, who failed, Sashi Brown, who failed, and now John Dorsey. And so, I honest to God, I don't know what to make of all of that. I really, truly do not. The only one to have any success in the last really 25 years as a general manager / player personnel director for the Browns, of course, is the one who left when Art Modell took his team to Baltimore, and that would have been Ozzie Newsome, one of the very best in the business.
Yeah.
And he was never theirs for long enough. He was the director of player personnel in 95, and then, of course, they bailed after that, and the rest is history. So, yeah, let's hope John Dorsey can break a trend of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 GMs long. 8 GMs in a row have failed. 8. Not 2, not 3, 8. And if John Dorsey can turn that around, God bless them. All right, we're going to talk more about that, the parade, and whether or not the fans did the right thing, and a recap of Wild Card Weekend as well, coming up after the bottom of the hour local sports center, which comes up after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Wild Stat of the Day is wild in name only this time. The Jaguars' 10-3 win over the Bills on Sunday set an NFL record for suckitude. Their 13 total points, unless you love defense, then it wasn't sucky, then it was great. Their 13 total points scored for the game is now the lowest scoring wild card game ever in NFL history, beating the previous low of 14 total points scored in a 14-0 Niners win over the Eagles back in 1996. So that's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Petrak on NFL Wild Card Weekend and the Browns parade, their ultimate walk of shame, coming up next right here on the team.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
They circled First Energy Stadium with an aerial view that resembled exactly what it was, a great big zero. Like the number of victories that the Browns were able to put up on the scoreboard this season, their ranking in the pantheon of NFL teams in history, their ranking in really all professional sports franchises in North America and probably beyond right now, they literally are a zero, the worst. And that was the message that the Browns fans tried to convey at their parade of losers, the ultimate walk of shame, shaming Jimmy Haslam's regime in quite inappropriate manner from my point of view. Joining us now to talk about it as we continue now at 3:40 on ESPN 106.5, the Ticket, Scott Petrak, who said he was going to be covering this very interesting event. And Scott, did you brave the cold temperatures to go out there and talk to fans on Saturday during the Parade of Shame?
I don't know if I would use the word brave, but I was out there.
How bad did it get? I mean, cold-wise. I mean, I know the actual temperature was above zero, but with the wind chill, it was down there below it, wasn't it, up there on the lake?
Yeah, it was cold. You know, I mean, if you were on the other side of the stadium, the south side,
right?
It was okay. You know, I mean, you're still bundled up, but when you tried to make the walk around, it was really bad, like walk backward kind of bad.
I can only imagine. I didn't go, but I fully supported the event. I didn't go because I'm not brave, and I didn't really feel like freezing to make my point. I just made my point by way of radio and social media that I supported this thing. Scott, before we talk about the fans and anybody, and I don't know what exactly you did in your coverage, I'll let you explain that, and the people that you talked to while you were there, how do you feel about the players who spoke out against this? Danny Shelton and Agba among them saying that, you know, this isn't what, you know, this is what real fans do, and when we turn this around and start winning, you're going to jump on the bandwagon and claim you've always been there, but we'll know you weren't. They were really upset by this. Does that bother you that they were upset by the fans expressing frustration with 0-16 and 1-31?
A little bit. I mean, I get it. You know, I get you're being a player and your season's over and the league's preparing for the playoffs to start that afternoon, and if you're on social media, you're hearing about your fans, you know, doing a parade to commemorate or whatever, the 0-16 season. I did think they walked it back, you know, especially Christian Kirksey was one of the guys. He walked it back the next day and kind of, you know, professed his admiration for the fans and that kind of thing. You know, to me, it's all temporary. Once they get back in the building, you know, once next season starts, it's not going to be an issue. These guys hear way worse from fans on social media when they lose a game and probably in public, you know, if they run into fans, you know, at the grocery store or the restaurant. I know that they hear stuff from fans just because of how bad they've been. But, you know, I think the overall thing is they were missing the major points, you know. And I get it. I get that the optics of it aren't great, you know. And if you just think about it really quickly, you say, why would you do it? But I think they were missing the point that the anger is, you know, it's targeted at Jimmy Haslam and ownership, and they just want better. And the fans aren't mad at the players. The fans are mad at the ownership.
Yeah, although there were a lot of people who were pretty mad at Coleman at the end of the last drive against Pittsburgh, they had a chance to finally get a W potentially. But when you say that, you know, Kirksey and some of them walked it back a little bit, is that of their own accord, or do you think they heard from management? Because management did indeed issue a statement regarding the parade saying, okay, message received, we get it, we understand, this is terrible, it is embarrassing, we are embarrassed, we feel bad for you, and we are doing everything we can to turn this around. So, you know, management dealt with it, I think, the only way they could, and that isn't throw shade at the fans, but to say, we understand your message, and we certainly respect your right to send that message to us. Do you think they talk to the players as well?
Maybe, you know, but these guys are out of the building. So, I mean, I guess they could have sent a text. But the organization had issued that statement, like, during the week. So it was days ahead of the parade. You know, I mean, Christian Kirk's been reading his tweet now. Cleveland, you deserve more. I know. We just have to stick together. Cleveland against the world. You know, we are family. So, you know, maybe just heard from enough people on Twitter to get their point. Maybe read some stories about what the parade was like and said, okay, it wasn't, you know, what I initially envisioned. And I think if anybody had been there, they would have come away with a different perception of it. And I didn't, you know, I never thought it was a great idea. I understood it. I was fine with the idea. You know, it's not something I would have done if I were a fan. But being down there, there was a lot of community sense to it. I think it's a lot of whatever adjective, disgruntled, frustrated, upset, angry, whatever these fans are, they just wanted somebody to kind of complain with. And this is how they did it. They don't have playoff games, you know, to attend. They only had 7 home games this year, and this was just an opportunity for the most fervent ones and the ones that aren't afraid of frostbite to get down there and kind of huddle together for an hour and a half and talk about the Browns. And they talked about the good old days, and they talked about who they wanted to draft. And in the middle of it was Jimmy Haslam, get the point and change. And, you know, to me, it was a much better vibe than I expected.
There were rumors of counter protests being there, that if this was a protest march, a protest parade, an 0-16 mocking thing, you know, like you said, aimed at the Haslams, that there was going to be a counter protest, because it wasn't just Kirksey and Agba and Shelton and others who made statements from the Browns' point of view. It was a lot of other fans saying that this fan display was embarrassing to the Browns fan base, and it's not something that should have been done, and that there was going to be some kind of a counter protest there. Did you encounter any of that?
And I did not, you know, and I did the loop of the stadium, and I didn't see any organized protest to the protest. I think there was one group of fans in the actual parade that, and I forget what the exact signage was, but, you know, it was, we're still with you, and, you know, I don't know if it was exactly anti-parade or not,
okay.
But there wasn't the back and forth I expected, or thought there I might encounter and was worried about.
Yeah, I like your description of it, by the way. A place for them to vent and scream and shout with other people who are like-minded, you know? I mean, how many Browns fans are yelling at their wives and their kids and at their dogs every Sunday because they're ticked off and you know, and they just look for, you look for, I mean, what do they say? Misery loves company, you know? I mean, you find somebody
right.
to share your frustrations with and to drag those full, I mean, there were some pretty funny floats out there, by the way, and
yeah.
I didn't see them all because I only saw a little bit of coverage online, but there were some pretty funny floats, including an extension of the Browns quarterback jersey that also included crossed off names of coaches and GMs. Over the course of the last, 19 years as well. But they did. They got together as a place to say, why do we do this? You know, I mean, just self-deprecation sometimes can be a very useful tool to say, you know what, we're so stupid. Why do we do this? And not parade, but why do we continue to be engaged and in love with this football team with all of the garbage they give us? And to get together with somebody and laugh about it and how it feels is sometimes cathartic.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think the fact that it was always labeled a parade, you know, got under some people's skins. If it was just a party, you know, if somebody rented out a bar and said, hey, we're going to watch playoffs and commiserate the Browns, it wouldn't have had the same reaction. And I know they were looking for a reaction.
Sure.
But, you know, that's how it felt like. And frankly, most of the people down there, I think, are season ticket holders. And they plan to go back again next year. And it's okay if I'm going to spend my money.
That was one of the favorite signs that I saw is two people, I don't know if they're husband and wife. No. I think it was a guy and a girl. Anyway, one of them held a sign that said, I'm with stupid, with an arrow to their left, and the person standing on their left was carrying a sign that said, season ticket holder. And it's just so, you know, and that's what I mean. Why do we do this? Why do we keep spending the money to go out there to what has become known as the factory of sadness, and I'll call it the pit of shame, on a weekly basis just to feel bad about ourselves? Why do we pay money to do that?
Right, and with the acknowledgement, we're going to do that, so at least I can try to do something that might affect a change. Now, you know, I don't know if they really believe that or not, but at least they're doing something.
Yeah, exactly right. By the way, you mentioned the word frostbite, so it brings up the Hugh Jackson thing. Has there been any discussion of when that's going to happen? It's going to be 57. It's going to be 57 degrees all over northern Ohio, I think, on Thursday. It might be a little bit better day for him to go out there and do that, but have they talked about it?
He said when he said that he would do it, he said on his own timetable. I think we're looking at training camp. I don't think he's going in before
he's
the
gonna do
before
it in the
July.
Summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cowardly, Hugh. That's cowardly. Oh, I mean, you know what? Scott, we're talking to Scott Petrak. Follow Scott's coverage of the Browns and the NFL on BrownsZone.com. BrownsZone.com. Scott, I mean, doesn't he owe the fans a little bit more than that, considering the fact that he got to keep his job? That 1-31, which no one has ever, ever done in the history of this sport, did not. How many people lost their jobs? Jack Del Rio was better than that and lost his job. I mean, John Fox was better than that and lost his job. Everybody in the league who has ever lost their job was better than 1-31 because nobody has ever been 1-31, and he gets a third season. Doesn't he owe them a polar plunge to get to really kind of, you know, put an exclamation point behind this misery?
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, but it's really cold, Bob. You know, the guy never expected to jump in the lake in the. I get it, but you know, I don't know if he owes anybody anything. 1-31's bad enough. He said it thinking there's no way on earth that they would get worse, and I get that they did, and I appreciate the fact that he's going to honor it, even though he's probably thinking it's silly and what was I thinking in the first place? Why did I even open my mouth? But I'm okay with him waiting and not risking hypothermia.
Oh, I'm not. I'm totally not. You know what? The Polar Bear Club goes out, I think, in Sandusky every second week of January, I think it is. And they go do their little polar plunge, and they make it a thing. Go be with those guys, for crying out loud. But you owe the Browns fans this. When he said that last January, I thought he meant, if this happens again, I'll do it like right after the season, also in January, and it happened again. Get your butt in there. You don't get to go to the beach in July when training camp starts and just go have a fun day at the beach and go into the lake with your kids. That's crappy on Hugh Jackson's part. Having said all of that, how crappy is it, in your opinion, that Hugh Jackson is still going to be the coach for a third year?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't have a horse in the race, and I see some decent things about Hugh Jackson. What amazes me is that Jimmy has him for as many changes as he's made in, it's going on 6 years now. He got the team and bought the team in 2012. For as many changes as he's made, this is the one that everyone pretty much in the fan base would have supported. And it's the one he's not making. So part of me kind of admires the backbone that seems to have come out of nowhere. And the other part of me is stupefied that, you know, if you're looking for some good PR, this would have actually been a PR success to make this move. So the fact that he didn't change and is sticking with Hugh Jackson, it amazes me. You know, and that's about it. I don't understand where he's coming from. I get when he says, you know, I think he's a good leader. I think he can point to things where he was a good leader. And when he says he was a hot coordinator 2 years ago and I like his offense, I think that's valid. But in this league, record overrides everything 999 times out of 1,000. And this is the one case where it doesn't. And I get why people are not only bewildered by it, but angered by it. I mean, yeah. I get that.
Yeah, and I'm one of them. And you know, Scott, record over everything, as you said, but I think absent record, you look for progress. Did we get better? Or is this coach making us better? And they were 1-15 last year and 0-16 this year. It didn't get better in record or in performance. It did not get better. It's a new defensive coordinator. I don't think the defense is markedly better than it was a year ago with Greg Williams. The offense certainly didn't get better. It's a new quarterback. It's new players at a number of positions. And I understand it's not the best roster in the National Football League. Sure. But did you see progress in the Cleveland Browns? Boy, this team is headed in the right direction. They are on the path now, right, under Hugh Jackson. Did you see progress that would explain away, if you will, or render null and void the actual one-loss record?
Not enough. Not enough at all. I mean, I saw progress on the defense. I did think the defense got better, especially stopping the run. I mean, it was a huge jump there. You could point to a couple players, individual players. Duke Johnson was better this year than he had been. Joe Schobert was better than he had been, but not overall. And that's why when you look at the reasons Jimmy Haslam kept him, you have to come up, like you have to dig deep just to try to rationalize, right? I mean, you have to point, you have to pick out certain aspects. Okay, maybe he did this okay, maybe he did that okay, maybe this guy got better, maybe it was all Sashi Brown's fault, but nothing says, yes, Hugh deserves a third year. You know, and I think even Hugh's most ardent supporters would say, we just have faith that he'll be better with a better roster, but he hasn't shown that. So, you know, Jimmy hasn't shown a bunch of faith in him, you know, and I think it boils down to Jimmy liked Hugh a lot when he hired him, and he was his first choice, and it feels like I just don't want to go back on what I thought 2 years ago, and I choose to blame Sashi Brown for everything that's gone on.
He did it on Sashi. He likes Sashi, too, and Sashi had no business whatsoever taking over that position on the football side. He's only been on the business side. He had no reason whatsoever, but you know what? He realized, okay, that was a big tragic mistake, and he dumped him after less than 2 years.
Right, but Hugh is more, I think you can say Hugh was more qualified for his job than Sashi was for his job.
No doubt. No doubt.
I mean, I think that's what
I'm more qualified to run a Fortune 500 company on Wall Street than Sashi Brown was to run the Browns. Okay, and I don't know squat about Wall Street. But I mean, that's how bad that was. Scotty, let me shift gears just briefly because we had Wild Card Weekend, and now the divisional rounds are set. Just your thoughts on, first of all, the most boring game, I think, in the playoffs I've ever seen. What did Tyrod Taylor throw for 120 yards? Blake Bortles threw for 87 yards. Is it putrid offense, or was it just two really rock-solid defenses resulting in that Jacksonville 10-3 win?
It was bad offense. I mean, Jacksonville's defense is legit, like really legit. But it was, I mean, it was poor offense. I thought the contests were bad. I thought the quarterbacks were afraid to throw the ball. It was just bad football. But my overall takes are, it just cleared the way in the AFC for a Steelers-Patriots AFC championship game. Because I thought Kansas City might give Pittsburgh trouble if it had held on, and then when it blew that lead, and then whoever's coming out of that Jacksonville-Buffalo game is not gonna beat anybody. So I think it's Pittsburgh-New England, and that should be a good one. And then in the NFC, to me, it's wide open. You don't know what you're going to get from Philly and Nick Foles. You don't know what you're going to get from Case Keenum. You know, you're going to get a great defense in Minnesota, but quarterback question. And I think the two teams that won, Atlanta and New Orleans, can go to the Super Bowl. And you don't always see that coming out of Wild Card Weekend. So I'm fascinated by the NFC, and I think whoever comes out of there will still be an underdog to whoever comes out of the AFC.
Maybe, and that depends on if Pittsburgh comes out of the AFC. I think if New England comes out, you're right, they'll be favored over anybody. But I wanted to ask you about Drew Brees and New Orleans because I'm just so impressed. They have had such a dominant running game, a two-headed monster running game this year, where Drew Brees didn't have to throw for 5,500 yards the way he has in previous seasons. And they were bottled up. Carolina took away the running game a lot and said, okay, Drew, you beat us. You know, I don't know if they just think that Drew Brees, future Hall of Famer, can't, you know, sling it anymore, but 376 yards later, sorry, bad news for you. They can beat you two different ways. They can air it out. They can run the ball. And for the first time in a long time, New Orleans has a really, really good defense as well. I feel like if they are the NFC representative, and they are my pick now, I did not pick them going into this, but if they are the NFC representative, especially if it's Pittsburgh, I think, you know, Pittsburgh doesn't have a great pass defense. I think Drew Brees might be able to just carry them to a championship.
You could be right. I like Pittsburgh's weapons more, you know, the Bell and Brown.
Offensively,
and
definitely. Big offensively, Ben. Definitely. Yeah. But they're a different team defensively without Shazier. And we all know that their corners, you know, I don't know if Hayden is healthy or not, but their corners have been suspect, and they've given up a lot of big passing numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I get your point. You know, I've seen Pittsburgh more. I know exactly what they can do. I was impressed by Brees yesterday. He made a couple big-time throws. You know, especially that one to Thomas Late where he got outside the pocket, made a real big time throw to set up that last touchdown. But I was really impressed with Thomas. I hadn't seen a ton of him since he's been in the league. You know, I know he came from Ohio State. And talk about rubbing salt in the Browns fans' wounds. I mean, the Browns could have drafted him instead of Corey Coleman. Same position. He looks about 6 inches taller, caught everything that I saw thrown his way. And those are the kind of picks that you go, well, that's where a franchise turned, is when you take the same position you're looking for, a position of need, and you draft the wrong guy, that just comes back to haunt you. And he was, I mean, he might have been the best player on the field yesterday.
I'll tell you what, you just, that was exactly what you said that you didn't want to do. That was salt in the wound. I didn't even think about that. They chose Corey Coleman, and they could have had Thomas. That's a terrible, terrible, but that's one of those, you know, missteps. And we were talking, going, and I guess we'll wrap it up, going full circle on the Browns then, on this. We were talking before about whether or not John Dorsey would be the difference maker here. He would be breaking a trend of eight general managers. Eight of them that failed to be able to take advantage of draft picks, high draft picks. You're going all the way back to 99 when they were the expansion Browns. Dwight Clark couldn't do it.
This defense is absolutely phenomenal, and they were very good in Pittsburgh when you saw the 30-9. But the way Blake Bortles played today, couldn't complete passes. He couldn't move the ball down the field. And if this team and if this quarterback plays this way next weekend, the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to blow the doors off of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
They get too cute. They go away from Kareem Hunt. They don't give really their best ball carrier a chance to convert, stay on the football field. Now, what do you think the Tennessee Titans are going to do? They're just going to play smash-mouth football and trying to control the clock. Mm-hmm. And then they started exploiting the Kansas City Chiefs' run defense. Mm-hmm. It's atrocious. And that is exactly what the Tennessee Titans want to see. They just couldn't get anything going because of the speed of the Falcons' defense and the way they were all over their wide receivers in particular here. And that can be a problem for a young team that's really for the first time making a trip to the playoffs together and just trying to find their way.
It doesn't matter what I think, but I could tell you this, that game didn't come down to that play. We can call it what it is, but you know, we could have played better as a team. For that situation to take place at hand, slide it call either way you call it, that game didn't come down to just one call that could have won either way.
Because we care. Everyone thinks that the people down here are not true fans. It's actually the opposite. Everyone says that if you want to protest, stop going to the games, cancel your season tickets. No, we want the team to win. We had to find another media outlet, and Chris McNeil was a genius organizer. He came up with another media outlet to show our frustration. Because we're not going to cancel season tickets, and we're going to go to the games because we want them to win.
Obviously, some of the Browns players who tweeted felt like it was parade. We talked to some of the organizers, Chris McNeil specifically, and it was clearly a protest. Being there, I would say it was a little bit of an A, a little bit of B. I think it was a protest disguised as a parade. All of the messages were very clear, which were they are not happy with Cleveland Browns ownership. They are not happy with Hugh Jackson. They are not happy with 0-16, with 1-31, with the direction of the Cleveland Browns franchise.
Guys were really locked in today. I thought we were physical without fouling. I thought we protected the rim. They missed some shots that they normally make, I think, but, you know, we certainly were able to defend them the way we had hoped we would be able to. Said, hey, we're playing a really, really good team. That team is going to challenge us. Expect them to make some type of run. They're probably going to make some shots that they haven't made before. We knew that they would make a run, and we responded when we needed to.
I honestly believe that the league is more equal than it's ever been. And that's mainly because I think, you know, maybe Alabama's not as unbeatable as they have been. And they've had games that were closer. Every team we played, I think South Carolina was much better this year than anybody gave them credit for. Kentucky, same way. Missouri had a great finish. I respect our league.
I love playing against ACC teams. I love playing against great athletes that they have. Each time I play an ACC game, I know what type of game I'm against. I know that it's going to be a physical game. I'm going against great athletes. You know, it's going to be a great challenge.
The only two teams playing this season, you know, the only game that's left, two SEC teams are playing. Obviously, all the talk about, you know, the SEC is this, the SEC isn't as good, I kind of think that that's proof that that's not true. But it's going to be a tough physical game for four quarters. We know that going into this game, we're playing a tough opponent. It's going to be a great matchup.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed, we roll onward. It's 4:12, hour number two of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. National championship game tonight. How about it, SEC? Two SEC teams and SEC country. It's got all the SEC honks flapping their gums and wagging their chins and whatever other metaphor you can think of for talking smack, talking S, if you will, about how great their league is. Nah, not buying it. You got a couple of really great teams at the top of it. It doesn't mean your league is better or deeper than the Big Ten or maybe even a couple of the other Power 5 conferences. But if you have thoughts on it, we'd love to talk to you about it. 866-240-1065 to join us. 866-240-1065. Talk about the national championship game. Also, wanted to get into the fact that the worst nightmare scenario for the Los Angeles Lakers that could have happened is happening. Jim Cushlin, do you remember long before the NBA draft and LeVar Ball started flapping his gums about how much better his son was than Steph Curry? And then about how the Chino Hills high school coach doesn't know what he's doing or how to coach his other son, LiAngelo. And then how Steve Alford doesn't know how to make the most use of Lonzo when he was at UCLA for the 1 year. And do you remember prior to the draft what I said about Lonzo Ball? Do you remember what I said that NBA teams should do?
I believe it was something like pass on him so you don't have to deal
run!
With that.
Run the other way. Run like the wind. Flee. Don't go anywhere near Lonzo Ball.
You just gave us a sampling. I have a feeling there's more of that, of those that we missed.
Run like the wind. Do not. I told you if I was an NBA GM, and I don't care if it was the Lakers, if it was Magic Johnson, or if I was Boston or the 76ers or anybody who had a top pick, do not pick Lonzo Ball. I said this very specifically, and it had nothing to do with Lonzo Ball's talent, which, by the way, come to find out, at least early in his rookie season, was overrated. Clearly not even the best rookie, not only not rookie of the year, not best rookie in the National Basketball Association through the first half, not the best rookie on the Lakers roster.
Good call.
Rated. True, right? I mean, Kuzma is way, way better
and it
at this
be,
stage of the game than Lonzo Ball.
I actually agree. Therefore, it should be noted, regardless of that, where are the Lakers? Nowhere special. Just the worst team in the Western Conference, third worst record in the NBA.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're in a very, very, very bad
funk. We're supposed to turn
right
around.
Now.
How is that supposed to impress LeBron to come out there next year? Come
yeah,
on.
Right? Yeah, exactly right. But here's the thing. What did I say? I said you can't bring Lonzo Ball because he brings his cancerous father with him. And I use that, of course, metaphorically.
Right.
His father is a cancer. You can't do that. I said if he is ripping every coach who has ever coached one of his kids, And he's the mouth that roared about how I'm better than Michael Jordan used to be and blah, blah. He is going to make life miserable for you as a franchise. That's what I said was going to happen. And sure enough, and by the way, orchestrating it to go to the Lakers. We're not working out for anybody else. We'll do a pre-draft workout for the Lakers only. We're going to play in L.A. LeVar would always say we, he was one of them.
Right, yeah.
We're only going to play in L.A. Boston, nope, sorry. Thanks for the invitation. Not working out for you. If you think you're going to draft us, again, us, don't bother because we don't want to play there. We're going to force a trade. We want to play in L.A. That's it. So forcing, I mean, that should have been enough of a reason for L.A.'s upper management to do what?
Pass.
Run! Run like the wind. Run away as fast as you can. I mean, don't go anywhere near that. I mean, if you can't smell the stench coming from that situation in advance, I mean, you're just not trying. And sure enough, here we are. In the middle of a 10 now game losing streak. LeVar Ball decided to go off on Lakers coach Luke Walton from Lithuania or wherever the hell it is that he is ruining his other two younger sons' lives by making them play in Europe instead of playing for Chino Hills High School and for UCLA because he didn't like the fact that UCLA was punishing my son for too long for his, theft, for his what would be felonious crimes over $2,000 of theft in shoplifting from China. He didn't like the fact that they were still being punished. But anyway, Ball goes up. Goes out to Lithuania and from there tells the media that Luke Walton can't coach. Luke Walton can't coach. The players have stopped listening to him. He has lost the locker room. He said they might not want to hear this, but this is the truth. Luke Walton is too young. He can't coach my son. They're not listening to him. And I'm not going to be paying any more attention, they're not going to pay any more attention to him until he's gone, until there's a new coach. Luke Walton, by the way, and I'm paraphrasing everything Ball said, obviously. Luke Walton, by the way, handled this with in as perfect a manner as you possibly could. Luke Walton's response was, because to take, you know, Ball had been out, Lonzo Ball had been out for a few games with an injury. He finally came back last night, and Luke Walton took him out midway through the first quarter and then took him out midway through the third quarter again. Asked about that by the press in the press conference afterward, Luke Walton's response was simply priceless. He said, yeah, I took him out because his old man was talking S. And then he waited, and there was a long, dramatic pause, and then he said, I'm just kidding. But he just handled it right. He said his old man was talking S, so I took him out early, which is precisely what you probably want to do, but it's not something he would do. He's putting his players on the court based on, you know, what combinations, what rotations he thinks can win, quite obviously. But his point was just to kind of make fun of Lonzo or of LaVar Ball. But that's not enough. That's not enough, because now the front office simply has to do something on Luke Walton's behalf. They have to hold Lonzo and LaVar accountable for this in some way. He is becoming – there's a great piece for Yahoo Sports that I read, Jim, by Chris Mannix, who said exactly what I said prior to the draft. This is their worst nightmare coming true, that this guy would not be able to watch his son play and just cheer from the stands like every other father. He would go to every microphone he could find, and they're all too ready and willing to put microphones in front of him because he is the mouth that roared. He's always good for a soundbite and a quote, and what is that? Clickbait. He'll make people click on their stories online. But this is the worst possible scenario. What's happening now, one rival team executive told Yahoo Sports, is that every team's fears about drafting Lonzo are coming true. And Jim, and I'm not trying to sound like I'm some sort of a god in terms of, but I literally don't remember, and I do this for a living. I read national sports writers, bloggers, sportscasters, television personalities, and so on and so forth for a living. And I did not read anybody saying, stay away from Lonzo. It was more of a question of, will Lonzo be as good as Jason Kidd? Or will Lonzo be the next Magic?
Yeah.
Will Lonzo's presence in L.A. be enough to lure LeBron James there after the season?
I know we covered that one.
That's right. And that's all people really said. And nobody that I read, and I'm sure somebody else was doing it, but nobody that I read was saying, stay away from him. No matter how talented he can be or might be, the baggage brought by his father, the negative publicity, the distraction that it's going to be for your team will never be worth the talent he could give you on the court. And I don't know anybody else who said it, but I said it, and I'm watching it all play out now. A rival executive says every team's fears about drafting Lonzo are coming true. And I don't know how many other teams had fears, because I don't know how many other teams considered it, given the fact that Dad was orchestrating the draft. You know, he won't even work out for you. Mannix writes, the Lakers are in a tailspin. Undermanned, inexperienced, losers of 9 straight before Sunday. Oh, okay, they broke it yesterday. There you go. Thank you. They broke the losing streak yesterday with the win over Atlanta. And here comes the NBA's premier carnival barker to pour salt on the open wound. On Sunday, LaVar Ball in Lithuania with his two younger brothers, or younger sons, beg your pardon, LiAngelo and LaMelo, who are preparing to make their pro debuts with Vytautas Prieni. Vytautas, Vytautas, I would guess. Prieni, anyway.
That's a good guess. I'll give you credit for that.
Thank you.
Hey, I butcher half the hockey names when I have to try to say them, so that was not bad.
That's one of the reasons I'm not a hockey fan. I mean that legitimately.
Oh, no. It's the one sport I could not do play-by-play because I would be spending half my time correcting butchered names.
And you know what, Jim? It's not, and I'm getting here. I am chasing a squirrel. This is the ADHD in me, but I'm just real quick.
I don't help with that either.
No, you don't. But it's one of the reasons why hockey is still a niche sport in the U.S., even though it's the fourth major sport, if you will. It's a niche sport in large part because we don't know any of the players.
Mm-hmm.
We know Markel Fultz, even though he only played 1 year in college. We know Steph Curry, where he went to college. We know all of the players coming up, even the one-and-doners, we know them because there's enough coverage of the superstars at the high school senior level to warrant one-and-done status. There's enough coverage of them for us to know who they are. So when they're coming up, like, okay, we're drafting this, you know, big guy out of so-and-so, you know, Carl Anthony Towns out of Kentucky, whatever the case might be, we know them all. All of these European and Canadian players who come into the NHL in every draft, we don't know why, because we don't watch international hockey. We don't watch hockey being played in Eastern Europe, you know, which is, you know, where Lithuania is and all of this sort of thing. And because we don't know the names, and you're talking about the pronunciations of the names, I'm talking about just knowing the players, knowing their names. We don't know them, and it makes it very hard for non-diehard hockey fans to dive in on a casual level and say, I like this new guy the Wings picked up from, I don't know, Prague. I like the new guy that Boston just got to mine the net from, I don't know, pick another.
Slovakia. Eastern... I'm trying to think of some of the countries that are usually good at hockey, like in the Winter Olympics or something.
I just said Czechoslovakia with Prague, but whatever. But you get the point. You know, Moscow or whatever. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. It's hard to get invested in guys you don't know. And all you're doing is cheering for the name on the front of the sweater, and that's it. And so, anyway, squirrel chasing there. Lakers, LeVar in Lithuania, where was I? Told ESPN that head coach Luke Walton had lost the Lakers, that Walton doesn't have control of the team, and nobody wants to play for him. The Lakers thought they muzzled Ball last month when public criticism of Walton forced a meeting with Ball, team president Magic Johnson, and general manager Rob Pelinka. Ball declared everyone on the same page then, yet the Lakers' recent skid has renewed his attacks, driving a wedge between the second-year coach and L.A.'s young star. Lonzo downplayed his father's comments, saying he's a grown man, he's going to say what he wants, I can't do anything about it. While Walton said he believes his job is secure, indeed, the Lakers are satisfied with the job Walton is doing, a team source said, and they have no intention of firing him. I'm going to say this. Lonzo Ball has got to stop being his daddy's little baby. He just does. He's got to stop. He needs to speak out against that. Not just say, my dad's going to say what he wants to say, and I can't do anything about it. Number one, do something about it. Get on the phone, call Pops in Lithuania, and say, Dad, shut the hell up. Quit talking about my coach. I've got to play for this guy. Our team is trying to win. You are hurting us, and you're hurting me. Because every time you say something about me and about our team and my coach, all of my teammates look at me and hate me for it. Shut up. That's one thing. Lonzo needs to man up. It's time to stop being the baby boy and get up in Dad's grill and tell him, get away. Don't come to the games. Don't talk to people anymore. I don't want you around. You're hurting me. That's number one. Number two is when he talks to the media, he needs to say, I have told my father I do not want to hear it. I have told my father I do not agree with it. And I have full support of Coach Luke Walton. My dad is his own man, and he just likes to hear himself talk. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Instead of, quote, Lonzo downplayed his father's comments, saying he's a grown man who's going to say what he wants and I can't do anything about it, it needs to say, Lonzo completely disputed his father's assertions. Lonzo says he has a great admiration for Luke Walton and is looking forward to turning things around quickly. This is as much on Lonzo being just too quiet. You know what Lonzo is, Jim? And I really, I'm a little bit disappointed in myself, I will be honest with you, that I'm spending as much time talking about Lonzo, because he hasn't earned it. He's not the best rookie. He's not the best, you know, one of the best young guards in the league. He's struggling. He's got a busted shot. He cannot, he cannot do a lot of things that people thought he could do at the NBA level. And part of the reason is he is about as passive as they come. He is a church mouse. He doesn't attack the lane and put pressure on opposing point guards to either score on them as he drives or find the right man and dish. He stands out there and plays soft offensively. He's not aggressive. He plays soft defensively. That's why he's not getting a lot of steals. He is a very soft, non-confrontational player. And that carries on to his private, or probably the other way around. His private life is expressed on the court because he's quiet, soft-spoken, and non-confrontational about his father. He needs to put on his big boy purple and gold panties and start stepping up against his father and against his opponents. He is just too passive for the Lakers' good. And this is precisely why nobody should have taken a chance on him. Nobody. Let alone the Lakers, where, you know, LeVar Ball practically engineered it that he would go. Nobody should have taken this guy on because he is too cowardly, too afraid, too quiet, too whatever you want to call it, to step up and tell Dad to shut his big yap. And And I think that's going to be forever the problem as long as he is a Laker. And I will tell you this, he will not be getting some sort of max contract offer after his rookie contract. Unless something drastic changes in the next two years, he will have a very short stay in Los Angeles. You think LeBron James wants to go anywhere near, and that's the funny part about this. I don't know if you heard the rest of it. The rest of what LeVar Ball said was that we don't need Luke Walton coaching. All we need to do is get LeBron out here and then get Jello out here. Talking about LiAngelo, the UCLA, I guess you can call him dropout since he's now playing over in Lithuania, who, by the way, is considered the least talented of the three Ball brothers.
Right.
But he said if you get LeBron out here with Lonzo and Jello, all we need is a couple of rebounders. Randall can stay and rebound, and I forget who the other one he said was, could stay and rebound, but that's a championship team right there. Are you freaking kidding me? So he's ripping everybody else. You think LeBron James would ever consider going anywhere near Lonzo Ball, given the fact that LeVar Ball has already called out Michael Jordan? He's already called out Charles Barkley. There are no sacred cows in LeVar Ball's world. You cannot be too high on the NBA pantheon, the pedestal, for LeVar Ball to criticize you and embarrass you and to try to take you down. There is not a living chance in hell that LeBron James is going to Los Angeles into the middle of that circus sideshow.
Yeah, no kidding. A couple things on this. First, since you touched on the LeBron part of it, that's why I'm convinced if he's leaving Cleveland this offseason, he's probably going to Houston. That's another story, though, for another day. The other couple things. With this public criticism by LeVar of Luke Walton, mark it down, people, because you'll never hear me say this phrase again.
Yeah.
Because of where Luke Walton was before the Lakers, you know who I want to hear from on this? I want to hear from Draymond Green. If anybody verbally can help put LeVar in his place for these comments, it would be Draymond Green of all people. It's probably one of the only times I would love to hear what he has to say if somebody were to ask him about it.
Has he never spoken, even when they played each other? He hasn't spoken about Lonzo or Melo?
Say what?
Draymond, he has not spoken about Lonzo or Melo. That's what you're talking about.
I'm talking about because LeVar's going after Luke Walton, and Luke Walton had to fill in for half a season as the Warriors head coach.
Right.
I'd love to hear, he's bad for the team, all that stuff that LeVar's saying. I'd love to hear what if somebody were to ask Draymond Green of all people.
Okay, just about LeVar in general.
Yeah, LeVar in general and his comments on Luke Walton specifically. Yeah.
Well, that was my question, though. I mean, because they played each other already. You know, the Lakers and the Warriors a couple of times, and I'm surprised no intrepid reporter has done exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Gone and asked Draymond Green, what are your thoughts on Lonzo, and what are your thoughts on LeVar, and what are your thoughts on...
We might get that now, since Luke Walton was dragged into this by LeVar, and therefore, you want the cherry on top of all of this, Bob? This one will make you laugh. And I know, due to the other non-sports things you do, you're aware of the organization known as the Better Business Bureau, correct?
Of course. Oh, yeah, I saw this story, too.
Yeah, so you know where I'm going. So for those who haven't heard, this is from the CBSSports.com article on this one I was reading from today. In the past year, BBB, as in Big Baller Brand, has closed 32 complaints, 14 of those complaints for delivery issues. This is, of course, with the shoe, right? 15 are problems with product and service. Many of the problems include customers asking for refunds, which Big Baller Brand does not provide. All of that put together, the Better Business Bureau has given Big Baller Brand an F. Love it.
One BBB gives the other BBB an F rating. I think that's hilarious. And by the way, this is the company that started selling shoes for a high school kid.
Right.
Or I'm sorry, college kid. I beg your pardon. He was in college at UCLA, right?
Yes.
The Zo2s.
Still UCLA when this started, yes.
Yeah, the Zo2s. He was selling the Zo2s for not $250, which is what a LeBron James premium shoe goes for, or a Michael Jordan premium shoe goes for. Two of the greatest players of all time. This kid who had never seen a minute in the NBA was selling shoes, or his dad was, for $495. Unless you wanted them autographed, then you got to throw another $400 on top of that.
Right.
And it was $895. You can have an autographed Zo2 shoe. Zo2 might be at a store selling them 2 years from now. Not selling them as an endorser of his own product. I mean, wearing the striped shirt at Foot Locker. What size can I find for you, ma'am? Because that's the way his career is starting right now. And given the fact that nobody is going to want to offer him a free agent contract when the Lakers are done with him, nobody is going to want to bring that mess to their city, I'm just saying. He might be. His father might be putting those striped shirts on all three of the kids, all three of them. One of them doesn't even get a senior year in high school. The other one doesn't get a single year of college ball under the tutelage of a Steve Alford to get ready for the NBA. They're playing in Lithuania. And I would not be surprised if all three of them ended up out of basketball by, I don't know, 5 years from now. I would not be surprised one iota. And in fact, what's sad is I might laugh. You know, I talked about this about, I don't know, Jim, a month or so ago, yeah. Whatever it was. And I said, I kind of feel bad for Lonzo Ball, but part of me is just growing, mm-hmm. you know, impatient with him, too. You know, nobody can put a muzzle on his father except him. You know, Magic Johnson can't do it. Rob Pelinka can't do it. The press doesn't want to do it because he's clickbait. The only person who could muzzle him would be Lonzo Ball to completely distance and disassociate himself from his father to try to resurrect his own or get his career off to a better start on his own.
And I don't know about you, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. I don't.
I don't either. It's very, very disturbing. It's very, very sad as well. Okay, want to get a timeout here. What infamous NFL player has been accused of using racial slurs during a game over Wild Card Weekend? I'm going to share that story with you coming up as well. We've got a lot more to talk about. Want you to be a part of it, though. 866-240-1065. 866. If you'd rather just sit and listen to me and Kush as we discuss and debate and digest these things, that's fine. Or dissect these things, I guess. You'd be digesting them. We'd be dissecting them. Anyway, that's fine, because I got a lot to say, but I'd love to hear from you as well. 866-240-1065. Join us.
Right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. It's 4:41. We got 19 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you. We're going to take you to drive time. Mike Miller makes his triumphant return back after a nice holiday break. Right, Kush?
Indeed, it was a combination of holiday and those Windsor Spitfires played 4 games in 5 nights late last week.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of hockey. No
yes,
question
it
about it. So Miller back in for drive time coming your way at the top of the hour. What are your thoughts on LeVar Ball and Lonzo Ball? Do you believe that Lonzo Ball is going to still be in this league 5 years from now? I have my doubts based on his father. Between lack of performance, lack of production, lack of signs that his ceiling is as high as perhaps some people wanted to believe it was, particularly his father. But absent that, the father's drama is not worth it, right? I mean, if he really is Jason Kidd, or if he's, you know, a young semblance of Magic Johnson, if he's out there averaging, you know, 17 points and 11 assists and 5 rebounds and, you know, shooting 45% or better from the floor, if he's doing things, you know what, Pops? Flap your gums all you want. We don't care. We're getting production.
Especially if it also translates into Laker wins, too.
Right. Correct. Yes. Obviously. And I think certainly those two things would go hand in hand, right? If he plays better and sets the table the way that he would need to be a scoring threat and, you know, that dime dropper that they want him to be, I think they would win a lot more.
Should. Games. Yeah, those should go hand in hand.
I will say this. There is a lot of talent on that team. Brandon Ingram is no joke. Kuzma is no joke either. Julius Randle can play. And obviously, you know, Lonzo Ball, if he is what they thought he would be, that could be the building, you know, the start of something really, really fun.
Hey, it's taken a couple seasons of seasoning and then one off season where you bring in some vets, but that's basically the Minnesota Timberwolves plan.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think it really could work. But anyway, then you deal with dad. But when the son is performing at the level Lonzo Ball is performing at right now, dad's not worth this. And he needs to know that. He being the son. Lonzo needs to know you're going to wear out your welcome fast because you're not playing well and your dad's a pain in the ass. He needs to know that if I don't get my S together, dad is going to kill my career. And he needs to explain that to dad. There's just no other way no way around it. He is not bringing the goods. If you're not bringing the goods, you are a net negative for your franchise. Lonzo Ball, by the way, is averaging 10.2 points a game thus far in his rookie year. He is averaging 7 assists per game, which is below what a lot of people thought he would be as a starting point guard for the Lakers, and 6.9 rebounds a game. The worst problem for Lonzo Ball is he can't shoot. He can't throw it in the Pacific from the beach. 35% from the floor, averaging 3.9 field goals made out of 11.1 attempts per game. His three-point shooting is even worse. That cockeyed, you know, sideways release of his to the left side of his head, flinging the ball back the other way, it's going in only 30% of the time. It was great from the high school distance. It was okay from the college three-point line, but from the NBA line, you got to go back a couple more feet. No, it doesn't work. Worse than that, he's a point guard who can't shoot free throws. Jim Cushlin, if I would have bet you five paychecks before this season started, that after the first of the year, Andre Drummond would have a higher free throw percentage than Lonzo Ball, would you have taken that bet?
Yeah, I probably would have, as would any person coming into this season would have absolutely taken that bet, and we'd be crying right now.
Yeah, he's a 48% free throw shooter, but the worst part, and Drummond is what, around 60?
Drummond, actually, you're going to make me look this up right now, but yes, he's still at 60. Go on.
All right, Lonzo Ball, this is the worst part about this for Lonzo Ball when it comes to those free throws. He's only taking 1.5 free throws a game.
That's inconceivable for a point guard.
He's 0.7 out of 1.5 per game, which translates to 48%. And the reason why is because what did I say he was at the top of this discussion? Passive.
Yep.
He doesn't want to attack. He doesn't want to take the hits. He doesn't want to get banged around by the bigger guys in the lane, going to the basket and drawing the fouls. He is a passive guy, staying outside, not drawing contact, because he doesn't like contact.
Yep.
And you add, when you can't shoot from distance, and he can't, and when you are afraid to attack to score in close, and he is, then you score 10 points a game. And you end up finding yourself, when dad is being the pain in the ass that he is, you find yourself being run out of your franchise. Ronald in Toledo wants to get a few words in on this. Ronald, thanks for joining us. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go right ahead.
What's up, guys? I just wanted to call and just see what you guys had to say. You know, I feel like Lonzo hasn't really, I mean, he's played 32 games. Okay, that means he got 50 games left. And I don't understand why everyone is basically acting like he's been in the league for 3-4 years. I mean, he's averaging 6 rebounds as a rookie guard. He's averaging 7 assists and 10 points. So you throw a little bit more around that and get some distractions out of his life. I mean, his dad is doing, you know, all this extra talking, but the media, it's really the media giving him that outlet. Like, the beginning of the show today, you spent 40 minutes talking about him. That's every day on First Take. That's on Ryan Russillo. That's Will Kane. That's anyone. That's anyone every day, every single day. So I don't understand
how. Right. You're right. And listen, I want to bring something up about that in a moment, Ronald. But when you say that, you know, you got to give him more time, you're right. There's no doubt. But for me, I mean, all we have to judge right now is the 33 games that he's played.
Yes, but look, out of those 32 games, he played against the Warriors 3 times. He's shooting 57% from the 3 against the Warriors. That's the best team. He's had 2 triple-doubles, youngest player since LeBron to have a triple-double. Like, he's had his highlights. Of course, he's not about to pop in the league like Kobe Bryant or anybody.
Well, nobody's saying, hold on though, Ronald. Nobody's saying he's going to be Kobe Bryant, but he can't even be Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma is a rookie also. He's brand new at this, just like Lonzo, and he's averaging 17.1 and 6.3 boards and shooting 46% and 37% from three. This cat is a power forward, and he's a better distance shooter than
the
point guard.
He's a baller, bro. He's a baller.
He's
he
the
also
real dude,
has,
man, and I like him
has
a lot.
Three.
But my point on that, Ronald, though, was that Kuzma's a rookie, and he's having much more success than Lonzo is, even though they both have only 30-some games under their belts. I'm not saying he has to be Kobe, you know what I mean? You said,
perfect.
You know, I'm not saying Lonzo has to be Kobe or Magic or Kidd, because that's the comparison a lot of people made before he got there. I'm not saying he has to be any of those things, but he can't even be Kuzma, and that's what we're talking about. When you can't even be the best rookie on your team, and Pops is ticking off the head coach, the club president, Magic, the GM, Palinka, when all of that is going on, man, it is just a recipe for disaster. You got to agree with that, don't you?
Yes, I agree. And one point before you let me go, I also want to make is a lot of Kuzma's success is due to Lonzo also. And it's a team game. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like seeing who's the best rookie on the team isn't going to mean anything probably at the end of the season, let alone 3 years from now when we can really evaluate these guys' talent.
You're right. It won't. 3 years, it will be a lot bigger sample size, obviously. But I'm not going to let you go yet either, because I want to ask you about this since you brought up, you know, this is a topic of conversation on all the national shows and all the local shows like this one, too. Do you think, did you hear what Rick Carlisle said?
No, sir.
Rick Carlisle, as you know, is the coach of the Mavericks, and he's also the president of the Coaches Association, or whatever it's called, for the NBA coaches. And he did not like that LeVar said what he said about Coach Walton, saying that he's lost him and nobody wants to play for him and all that other stuff. But he didn't just rip LeVar. He's ripping ESPN for even covering that and printing that.
Yeah,
do you think the media – hold on, because my question to you was this. Because you said that people need to stop talking about it, and I understand that. I do. Carlisle said that it's irresponsible for the media to keep going to this guy for quotes when he is not a member of the organization. He's not a team executive or anything like that. He's just the parent of a player. And he thinks the media should stop talking to LeVar Ball and stop printing what he says, and then a lot of this stuff will go away. Do you think he's right? Should the media just ignore LeVar Ball?
Well, honestly, sir, this has been going on from when LeVar said that he was better than Jordan and his son was better than Stephen Curry. And that was like a month before last year's draft, so that's going on a year. So, I mean, it's kind of too late to apply that approach, because, like, the world nowadays, it's like Rick Carlisle said, he's literally an average person. If you want to be, like, you know, literal, he's a parent of a player. Like, my dad coached me. That's like my dad getting famous. So it's like it's a product of the times. They gave him all that publicity, and now he's interacting with the president of the United States. It's 2017, 2018. That's what happens.
It is crazy. Last thing, how much do you put of the blame for this on Lonzo? That Lonzo won't tell Dad to pipe down. You, Dad, you're hurting my career. You're making everybody hate me. My own teammates are mad. You're talking trash about my coach, and I got to play for the guy. Shouldn't Lonzo step up at some point and tell Dad to shut up?
I mean, I feel like maybe he has, man. Maybe he has. Like, we as outsiders, we really don't know that. And his answers, like, you know, he's a grown man, he's going to say what he was. Those answers may be the result of him going to his dad and saying, you know, Dad, maybe you should tone it down. And his dad responding with a response such as, you know, son, I'm a man, I'm going to, you know, I know what to do. You know, so we don't know the family's relationship.
You might be right. Maybe he has had that conversation. It's just that, like I said, I wish I would hear Lonzo say something a little more forcefully to the press. In the same way that I'm talking about his game being kind of passive, I think he's passive when he talks to the press, too. Maybe he's not comfortable in the spotlight, which is weird because his dad puts them on, you know, the TV show or, you know, their online TV show or whatever it is. So we should be used to the spotlight. But
we're kids, bro. He's 20. He's 20 years old, bro.
Yeah, he is. And I'll tell you something else. I feel bad for him. I really do. Because I don't think he deserves all of this, but until he steps up to Dad, and maybe it has to be public, he's going to keep getting it, and that's the problem. Hey, Ronald, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it. Good stuff.
Hey, now, Bob, since you made me look it up by throwing the numbers out there, I wasn't prepared for it, anticipating it, but since you did, here's your Andre Drummond free throw percentage update. He is 109 for 173.
We need a drum roll for this.
We do. I need to get something.
Yeah, we do, because this should be, anytime we update this, it should be something that we celebrate.
I agree.
Especially if it's still good. All right,
what do you got? I agree. As of this moment, he is 109 for 173. That comes out to exactly 63%.
63%. Career 38?
Eight.
Did we say?
Career 38 coming in.
That's awesome.
He is at the point where, because of this percentage, he's about a month away from having more free throws made than in some of his previous full seasons.
It's outstanding.
Like, I just looked at it. One of them was like 137 free throws made when he shot like 38% like 2 or 3 years ago. So he's a month away from, you know, breaking that.
Jim, I can't tell you. I can't tell you how much I respect this cat.
I do.
You know, I've for years.
I felt it got so bad that I was on these airwaves when I would either sub for you or Mike and this topic would come up, and I say, no, it's gone too far. You need to call Rick Barry and just suck it up and learn the grandma style.
Right, which we have talked about.
Yes.
You know, but for years and years and years, I watched big guys like Shaq, You know, and of course, that's where the Hack-a-Shaq thing was born.
Of course, yeah.
But he wasn't the first. I mean, even going back to Wilt, if you really want to go back that far, for whatever reason, big guys, I still don't know the reason. I don't know that I will ever understand the reason, to be honest with you, why this is such a thing for big guys, because you're taller by the nature of being a big guy. You're 15 feet away. You could almost just freaking reach up and drop the thing in from 15 feet. It feels like.
Which technically, by our rules, would be legal as long as your feet don't go ahead of the line.
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be the way that it is, but it is. So anyway, and I've always had a lack of respect for people like Shaq. And I've been on the radio for 20 years now, so I went through most of Shaq's career saying this is ridiculous that he's 50% from the line, that they have a hack of Shaq because he is such a detriment to his team, you know, in winning time because he can't. How are you not spending countless numbers of hours, I would say, in the off season, improving your free throw shooting to help your team at these crunch times? Your 26 points and 12 rebounds a game are great, but when you can't be counted on in the final 2 minutes, I mean, that's ridiculous because they're going to put you on the line and you can't, you know, give your team an opportunity. And whether it's, I'm trying to think of some of the other guys. Chris Dudley, you remember the big 6'10 doofus from the Cavaliers was another one who couldn't shoot.
Yeah, vaguely, but I do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this goes on with a lot of these guys, and none of them ever did it. None of them ever figured out a way to change it or turn it around. And I'm watching Andre Drummond, and I just want to go buy that brother a beer and say, man, this is on me. You are awesome. I have so much respect for this guy.
Yeah.
Because he took it upon, and I don't know what he did. Do you? Two years ago, Jim, in the offseason, we were on the show talking about how the Rick Barry thing and what's he going to do. You know, there were stories in the Free Press and Detroit News and other media about Andre Drummond's free throw woes and what he's going to do in the offseason and all kinds of speculation. I didn't hear anything this past offseason. Did you?
I know he was
about
once
this?
Again. I'm looking it up again because I might miss some of the names. But what I do know is that he was hard at work again all off season. I forget the gentleman or gentlemen that were involved.
The shooting coaches.
Yeah, but it had to do with we're just stripping it all away. We're starting over. And your point is we're going to get you to a mental point where you're doing the same thing over and over again. You know, exactly the same
which
form.
Which isn't new, by the
no,
way. That's
no, it's not.
That's not new coaching, because that's what everybody teaches young kids on free throws.
Right.
Do the same thing every time. Same number of dribbles, same positioning, same this, same that, whatever. All the way down to when you breathe and when you inhale, when you exhale before the shot. All of that stuff is standard coaching.
Yep.
And that's the reason I didn't know if there was anything in the offseason, you know, in the media about different techniques other than just that. Because whatever it is, he just did it. And the fact that he went from career 38% to now in, you know, January, we're pushing up toward the All-Star break, and
this is
Andre
legit
Drummond
now. This
is
legit.
63%.
I don't think this is. Yeah, because this is legit.
It's
this
not
is
fluke,
not going
right?
away. Yeah, we're beyond it being a fluke.
I've been waiting for a big man to truly fix it, you know, for years
might
now.
Might have one.
And now we found one. And I just want to give him all of the mad respect in the world because that is awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking at it real quick because I had
it takes a man to change. It takes a real man to recognize the problem and to change it the way that he did.
Yeah, this is Andre Drummond said, no, it wasn't anything mechanical. This is from a Detroit Free Press article back in October saying, no, it's nothing mechanical, really nothing to do with that. It's bringing in, he brought in one of his former trainers from when he was younger. I'm blanking on the name because I'm not seeing it in this old article. But basically, he started from scratch. And whatever happened, it clicked this time.
Well, I just want to say congratulations to him. And I hope he keeps it up because, you know what, this is what you got to be, especially when you're making the money he's making. You know, not only leading the league in rebounding and doing the things that he does, to not be a liability in crunch time, not be a liability ever where they might be doing hack-a-dray anymore because you worked yourself out, you worked it out, you worked that problem out. That's fantastic. God bless the man. Okay, that's it. That's all the time we got. I hear that music. That means shut up and get ready for Mike Miller, who returns to Drive Time coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow afternoon on the Extravaganza where we will.